Now, I'm sure many, if not all of you, have heard what the tragic story that happened in Oregon, Southern Oregon this week, where a family was lost, or they ended up lost, and the father went out to look for help and died on the way. I just want to read a little excerpt from the Oregonian, yesterday's article. The San Francisco man who left his stranded family deep in the southwest Oregon woods to seek help died of hypothermia possibly 2 days before searchers found him. The doctor who conducted the autopsy said Thursday. And Deputy State Medical Examiner Dr. James Olson thinks 35-year-old James Kim probably died 2 days after he left his wife and two young daughters Saturday to find help. Before he died, James Kim, already weak from little food and freezing temperatures, hiked 5 miles up a snow-covered road, then 5 miles down a treacherously steep canyon that stymied dozens of searchers for 2 days. In the end, his body was found about a mile from his station wagon, separated from the vehicle by the steep walls of a canyon. The Kims were reported missing November 29 after failing to return home from a Thanksgiving vacation to Seattle. Police said the Kims left a Denny's restaurant in Roseburg about 9 p.m. November 25 for the 22-ton lodge near Gold Beach. After missing the exit from Interstate 5 onto Oregon 42, they decided about 10:30 p.m. to take what looked like a direct route on Bear Camp Road. Bear Camp Road starts about 900 feet elevation and climbs to 4,000 feet over the top of the Coast Range to Gold Beach. A rough road, even in the summer, in the winter, it is clogged with snow, but used by hunters, snowmobilers, and others seeking outdoor recreation. As their all-wheel drive 2005 Saab crept along the narrow track, the Kims found the road signs confusing and noticed that some warned of snow and dangerous winter driving conditions. It was snowing, and they stopped several times to move rocks out of the road. The couple decided to turn back, but were forced to drive in reverse, with James Kim looking out through an open driver's door and revving the engine to move through the snow. Running low on gas and seeking to get to a lower elevation, the couple left Bear Camp Road, turning down a Bureau of Land Management road that normally is closed by a locked gate. Vandals had cut the lock and opened the gate. The Kims drove 15 miles down the road to where it was only raining. At 2 a.m., they stopped for the night. The next day, they were confronted by heavy snow and stayed in the car, occasionally running their engine to use the heater. They continued to do the same over the next 2 days as snow fell. James Kim read to his children every night. On Wednesday, the family was out of gas and started a fire using magazines and driftwood, but the wood was frozen, heavy, and hard to gather. The next day, they turned to a spare tire for a fire in the afternoon. On Friday, they pried the four tires from their car and by 11 a.m. had stoked the blaze they hoped would attract attention. They also began stowing wood under their car to try to keep it dry. By afternoon, the fire was out. They heard a helicopter. Area agencies had begun their search for the family. Saturday morning, the couple switched gears. In studying a map of Oregon, they estimated the town of Gallus was located on a river about 4 miles east of them. James Kim hoped to get to a road with cars on it or follow a river to the town. In reality, the Rogue River hamlet was 15 miles away, separated by four other steep creek drainages. Saturday morning, James Kim built a fire for the family before saying goodbye at 7:45 a.m. with a promise he would return by 1 p.m. if he didn't find help. About 9:30 a.m., Katie Kim heard and saw more helicopters. At 1 p.m., her husband had not returned. Later, James Kim was found with a backpack and wearing a heavy dark jacket, gray sweater, t-shirt, blue jeans, and tennis shoes. He had trekked more than 10 miles on his quest. When he died, he was hardly more than a mile in a straight line from his family's car. Searchers also pointed out Thursday that the car was just a mile away via another rugged forest road from Black Bar Lodge. Although closed for the winter, the lodge was stocked with leftover supplies from the summer, its owner, John James, told the Associated Press. He has no way to know about the lodge, said Josephine County Under Sheriff Brian Anderson. It's a tragedy. During Thursday's news conference, Oregon State Police Lieutenant Greg Hastings emphasized that the Kims were travelers unfamiliar with the area caught in rapidly changing weather conditions and should not be blamed for that. James Kim did nothing wrong, Hastings said. He was trying to save his family. Still, he urged drivers to check road conditions by calling special state numbers as they travel. That story really, grabbed my attention this week, because perhaps, it was 2 months ago when I first started meeting with some of the ministers in town, and at the first of those Wednesday morning gatherings, Phil Smith, the Bible church pastor, told of how he had gone out hunting a few days before and had started to get lost. And was Bob Carter, who is part of the search and rescue team in the area, he's also the Presbyterian minister, Bob took Phil to task for not taking along adequate emergency supplies in the case he got lost. Now, fortunately, Phil found his way back, and Lee too, Lee Corral, the Lighthouse Church pastor, was also there, and he too just railed on Phil for not having the right proper equipment just in case. And so, at the following monthly ministerial meeting, Bob had the devotional, and he talked about Paul getting stranded and shipwrecked, and fortunately for him and his shipmates, the natives, the people of that island, showed hospitality, and they provided heat and shelter and food to help these shipwrecked survivors get by. And then Bob went and showed the basic essentials that everyone should carry if they're planning on going out into the woods or traveling across anywhere, just in case. And when the snow was deep here in last month, I guess now, I thought of going out snowshoeing, but decided, I don't yet have those things necessary, just in case I find myself lost. And, Bob was saying to all of us, I don't want to be the one to tell your wives that, if your husband had just taken just these few things, we would have found him alive. But, he didn't. So I decided against going out by myself and to wait until I had, so I could get myself the sufficient supplies. And so this last week I ordered a few things from REI and such, and I got them. So I just want to show you what I have here. The first, is I have a little storm shelter thing, very small, light, even comes with a small book of matches inside. It's a rain poncho to keep the weather out. And see, I have here some waterproof safety matches. And a little candle to help fires get started. Of course, you want food, some food bars. Bandages, not quite as necessary, but useful. Little flashlight. Good for seeing as well as signaling. And then, up here, a whistle. Now, you can only shout for so long, but you can always whistle.
Not very
What? Sorry. And, some hand warmers to help maintain heat. Another one here. And let's see, what do I have here? Oh, Well, I'll tell you what I have in here is a little space blanket. Very light, but it, you know, it covers up the whole body and helps maintain body heat. One of the most important things that needs to be done. There's one in here. Actually, I do. It's back. I don't have a flare, but I have a glow stick, a big glow stick. And actually, here's the compass. Yeah, on the other end of the whistle.
Do you have one of those for every person?
No, I don't.
You won't even get it when you go out.
No,
the other ones who go all together, that was mine.
I guess so.
You have to survive,
but
it helps, so.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds silly, but I think that any time when we get snowstorms around here, this year we had some drifts. Not, we don't usually have those.
Yeah.
You can get the ditch or anything, and you need all that stuff in your car all the time.
Yeah, so that's what Bob was saying. You know, he always keeps something in his car, and when he goes out, whether snowshoeing or kayaking, he takes the basic supplies with him. Because they, 2 or 3 days can mean the difference between rescue or dying.
This gentleman didn't really do anything wrong. There's no criticism, but unless you have a very achievable objective,
yeah, and so, you know, the state police, Lieutenant Hastings said the Kims did nothing wrong. True, there's may not be one thing that you could point to as obviously wrong, but, and their motivations for making the decisions were probably good. They wanted to find their way back and they wanted to find help. But a series of imperfect decisions based on imperfect information resulted in a tragedy.
I mean, I'm just saying for future people should stay with their car, but for that situation, it's not like you jumped out of a car and decided to get help. Mm-hmm. They've been there a long time, and nobody but nobody knew where they were.
Right.
Liberty rule.
Yeah.
Well, that's the repercussions if they didn't know the area.
Right. They didn't know they were off the road. They thought they didn't know they were on a.
No, they knew they
had to get to lower elevations at that point,
mm-hmm.
And they achieved that, but then still,
you know,
came at lower elevations, and
yeah,
sad thing.
You know, like most of us, we don't plan to get lost. We don't expect to get lost, but sometimes it happens. And so, you know, like us, they weren't adequately prepared for that condition. And as I was thinking about that this week, I asked myself, could we make similar applications in our spiritual journeys? We're warned, we're told by Jesus that we will experience difficulties in our spiritual journeys. We'll have wilderness experiences. In John 16, verse 33, I have told you all this so that you may have peace in here on earth. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. The whole book of Hebrews is written to people who have become discouraged due to difficulties and are on the verge of giving up. When we feel lost, when we can't seem to find our way, are we adequately prepared to weather those storms? Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. We see that in Matthew 1 and Luke 19. And let's see. Matthew 1, verse 21. And she will have a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. then in Luke 19, Jesus claims for himself the reason, at least one of the reasons, why he came. This is the story of Zacchaeus. Verse 9 and 10, Jesus responded, "Salvation has come to this home today, for the man has shown himself to be a son of Abraham. And I, the Son of Man, have come to seek and save those like him who are lost." Now, the most immediate application of these texts is obviously for those who haven't yet found salvation. But I think it also can be applied to the ongoing journey that we as Christians experience. There are times when we find ourselves, for whatever reason, off the path that God would rather have us on. Or we might be on the right road, right path, but it doesn't look or feel right to us. Jesus, I believe, came here on a search and rescue mission. And so as such, he comes to seek and save those that are lost. But in addition, when Jesus finds us, we are inducted into the search and rescue team. We become part of his team for finding the lost and helping to bring the knowledge of Jesus so that others too may be saved. As we mentioned last Sabbath, Jesus' mission we should seriously consider making our own. And as we go out to try to seek and to bring salvation to those who are lost, it does no good to anyone if we aren't adequately prepared ourselves. And so that we might be more effective, so that we might be fully effective in our mission for Jesus, we need to make sure that we, too, are fully prepared and equipped. So, the essentials of survival, at least what I recall from Bob Carter's short talk a few months ago, when you think you're lost, stop. It's usually best to wait for rescue. You know, often when we are lost, it's usually late in the day and the light is growing dim. We need to wait for better light. Sometimes in our panic state, we stop recognizing familiar landmarks. We need to stop, wait, calm down, and see if we can start to recognize any familiar landmarks. A map doesn't do us any good if we don't know where we are. All the advice, all the counsel, and any sort of help we might seek are useless if we don't know where we are. Now, we might have a radio and we can talk to someone, but if we aren't sure where we are, any advice is going to be very vague at best, and any specific advice probably won't do us a whole lot of good. If we continue trying to find our own way out, we risk both exposure and exhaustion. It might actually cause more problems. We might get injured, and that often results in, I guess, worse things than simply staying where we are. We might have the wrong information, or we might end up making poor decisions based on poor information. We don't like to wait, because waiting is hard. It feels like we aren't accomplishing anything. And human nature is such that I think most of us would rather be doing something, anything, rather than sit and wait. One of the most important things after stopping is to get shelter, to protect yourself from the elements. And I see in that Jesus' righteousness, his covering. Physically speaking, when we don't have appropriate covering in cold climates, we can experience hypothermia. And hypothermia can result, you know, even in temperatures as high as 45 or 50 degrees because of moisture. Stage 1, body temperature drops 1 to 2 degrees Celsius below normal. Mild shivering occurs, and we're unable to perform complex tasks with the hands. Shiver may be mild to severe, and the hands become numb. Blood vessels in the outer extremities contract, lessening heat loss to the outside air. Breathing becomes quick and shallow. Goosebumps form. Raised body hair on end in an attempt to create an insulating layer of air around the body. So now you know why goosebumps occur. It's to create insulation. Stage 2. Body temperature drops a further 2 to 4 degrees. Shivering becomes more violent. Muscle miscoordination becomes apparent. Movements are slow and labored, accompanied by a stumbling pace and mild confusion. But the victim may appear alert. Surface blood vessels contract further as the body focuses its remaining resources on keeping the vital organs warm. Victim becomes pale. Lips, ears, fingers, and toes may become blue. Finally, at stage 3, body temperature drops below 90 degrees. Violent shivering persists. Difficulty speaking, sluggish thinking, amnesia starts to appear, inability to use hands, stumbling, cellular metabolic processes shut down. Below 86 degrees, shivering stops, and the exposed skin becomes blue and puffy. Muscle coordination becomes very poor, walking becomes difficult, incoherent, irrational behavior to stupor. Pulse and respiration rates must decrease, major organs fail. Clinical death occurs because of decreased cellular activity in stage 3 hypothermia. The body will actually take longer to undergo brain death. Hypothermia, the biggest danger is that it robs us of the ability to think, ability to think clearly. And when we stray farther away from Jesus, when we are exposed to the elements, when we stop being covered with Jesus' righteousness, you know, our ability to make rational spiritual decisions, I think, becomes impaired. Revelation 3, verses 17 and 18 reads, "You say, I am rich, I have everything I want. I don't need a thing, and you don't realize that you're wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. So I advise you to buy gold from me, gold that has been purified by fire. Then you will be rich, and buy white garments from me so you will not be ashamed by your nakedness, and ointment for your eyes so you will be able to see." In addition to body covering, body heat escapes from the head. A lot of it escapes from the head. And so it's important to have head covering as well. And Paul in Ephesians 6:17 talks of a head covering, the helmet of salvation. Reads, "And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God." The next thing to ensure for adequate survival is water. And it's interesting how Bob points out that in Southeast Alaska, you just kind of have to open your mouth and you'll get water. Whereas in much of the rest of the country, water is something that you have to be concerned about. And I guess around here, water that forms in the little crevices of skunk cabbages are safe to drink. It's rainwater. That's what he said. So if it's not falling, then you can find some skunk cabbage and take some water from there. And Jesus is the water of life. Water is also necessary in a spiritual sense for a spiritual life. John 4, verses 13 and 14, Jesus says to the woman at the well, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again," speaking of the well and the water, "but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And then in John chapter 7, verses 37 to 39, "On the last day of the feast, the great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, 'If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, oh, of his heart will flow rivers of living water.'" Now he said this about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive. The next thing that we need to be concerned about is food. You know, the body is a big engine. It requires energy in order to maintain heat. And we can prevent heat loss, but eventually we need to generate heat. And food is the means for doing that. In our spiritual life and our spiritual journeys as well, we need food. And Jesus is the bread of life. Our spiritual life requires a connection with Jesus. John 6, 35, Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst." Finally, in order to attract the attention of rescuers, we need light and signals. They help the rescuers to find us. And I want to take it further in the spiritual sense that it helps others who are also lost to be rescued. It attracts those who are lost to us when we signal, when we show our light. John 8, verse 12, again Jesus spoke to them, saying, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." And in Matthew 5, verses 14 to 16, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." As mentioned a lot of different things this morning, and I'm not going to lay out how I think everything mentioned this morning fits into our spiritual life and journey. I don't know if you recall being in school reading textbooks where you come to the last part of some chapter where it says this is an exercise for the reader. Well, the precise manner of how all of this applies to your own life is left to you as an exercise for the listener today. Now, just as a few things to think about as you go through this exercise, in both our physical and spiritual journeys, we should be adequately prepared. Just because we strive to follow Jesus doesn't mean that we will never make imperfect decisions from time to time. We can only come to the rescue of others when we have first been rescued ourselves. Jesus' mission was search and rescue. So if we claim to be his disciples, shouldn't our mission be what his was? The essentials: stop, shelter, water, food, and signal.